Well, the and then after you showed it at Berlin, I believe that you took it to a screening at the at New York's Museum of Modern Art. Is that true?
Oh, we had a preview screening only, not a public screening, at the Museum of Modern Art.
Okay,
Yes.
all right. And was that press or was that
Oh, that was mainly for people interested in the film who were and people in it, like Bam Bam, the rappers, and so on.
Okay.
And it wasn't a public screening, but we got a great reaction there. What was wonderful for me was a lot of the young rappers got up and spoke afterwards,
Right.
and they thought that it really represented them well.
Yeah. Now the name of this neighborhood, the colloquial name is Brown Sub, and it is basically in the southwestern part of Miami.
That's correct. It's in what's called Liberty City. They don't refer to it as South because South's so much connected with South Beach,
Right.
but they call it Liberty City. And one of the ironies is that most of the guys, except Elliot, who'd been to Iraq, had never been outside of Liberty City. They never. I took them to South Beach for the first time. They experienced South Beach for the first time. So it's like another reality. In many ways, it was almost like another country. I didn't feel that I was in America when I was there.
And basically, the violence that happens in that city, for those who are unfamiliar with the economics of drug dealing, it comes down to what exactly? Just to put it in simple terms, people
Well,
are
the
killed.
statistics in that area are much worse than the statistics with the soldiers in Iraq. One of the police officers said that it's, one in eight young men in that area are killed violently before they reach the age of 23. And I knew very much I was going to war zone and that I'd possibly see people killed. I didn't expect the lead character and the main reason for going to Baghdad, for going to Brown Sub, to get killed, and that was tragic.
Let me understand that fully. You just said one in eight. That is 12% of the youth population buys it
In
on
this
the street?
particular rough neighborhood, and that's what I was told
Right.
by a professor of criminology at Miami University. That's not like for the whole of Florida or
No,
anything.
no.
This is in this particular region. One in eight doesn't reach is killed by the time they reach the age of 23. If you look at the film, every character in the film has been wounded in a way which would have killed them if they hadn't had good modern surgery. One guy's been shot just behind the spinal column. Willie T, he showed his horrific point-blank shotgun wound, and Professor Joe Byrne says they come at each other with bazookas, for Christ's sake. I mean,
Right.
that's his words. But when I was there, Willie T's residence was attacked with AK-47s with barrel magazines. That means they have 100 rounds in each.
Yeah.
And the guys had bulletproof vests and hand grenades. So it really is like a war zone. I felt that I was in as much danger there as I would be in Baghdad.
Yeah. That's the analogy that I first heard when I first heard about this, that this is the and it's I presume naturally one assumes that there are in other major cities where that this is not unique to Miami or
Oh, no,
to
not
Sabra.
trying to say it's unique to Miami. This film grew out of the film Soundtrack to War, where Elliot Ludlum was at Uday's palace. I'm sure you've seen that film.
Right.
And Elliot actually said to me, "George, although I've done 300, contact missions in Baghdad, I feel safer and more secure in the army." And
Right.
then in the when he gets there, he says he'd been using a gun since he was 12 years old. So it really is shows you the world that that the young soldiers, that a lot of the young soldiers that are fighting in Iraq are fighting in, and that really they're going to the army as an alternative, as a way out. And I think that's incredible thing, that they actually feel safer in the army in Baghdad with all of its dangers than they do in their own hood. And the irony for the Lovett mother was that she lost a son in her own, under her own eyes, more or less, and the other one she felt secure when he went back to the army, when he went back to Iraq. She felt like any woman in Baghdad. And as Professor Joe Byrne explains, that if the family had cooperated with police, or anyone had cooperated with police in trying to get the murderers, then there are lots of cases where the house is firebombed and people are killed. So it's very similar to the insurgents in Iraq, who I know very well, who punish families for cooperating with the government or with the Americans.
Yeah.
In this case, they punish for people for cooperating with the police. It actually reminds me more of Somalia, because I've covered Somalia as well, and the gangs remind me with their big, potted up trucks and that. You see plenty of these hot vehicles in the film. They remind me of the Somali technicals, and they're bristling with just as many guns.
Let's just review briefly for people who are not familiar with your career. With you're also known in Australia as an artist. You've got you've had gallery shows, and a lot of your art, I guess most of your art is based upon your experience in war zones. Starting with Vietnam, you have covered or been in what war zones?
Well, the list is so long, I've lost track of it. Cambodia, Somalia, Rwanda. The worst times I had were in Rwanda. I saw hundreds of thousands of people killed with machetes before my eyes. Bosnia, Yemen, Palestine, the Congo, Mozambique, South Africa under apartheid, Northern Ireland with the IRA fighting, Stone Belfast. The list just goes on and on.
You're one of war photographers and people who documentary.
Most of the ones Americans have been involved in too, like Nicaragua and El Salvador and the Philippines and then more recently East Timor. I just, personally, it's a sad indictment of the world that I've actually lost track of the wars that I've covered.
One thing I like about your film in particular, George, is that it's not just dispassionate observing of a very difficult, although, creatively vibrant environment, but it's also horrible, and that death is around the corner. What I really like about this is that you kind of break down the maybe there's some unwritten rule that a documentarian doesn't participate. He or she just watches, observes, and gets the truth of it. But what I like about your film is that you step in and do everything you can to launch the career of Denzel Lovett, who I really want to see happen, because you like him immediately. He's a beautiful looking kid. He's extremely talented. You can tell right away he's really got it, whatever that you want to call it is.
Yeah.
And I just love that you stepped in, and a good part of the second half of the film is about you trying to get him launched with the music and when the rap music producers in New York and elsewhere, and also Los Angeles.
Well, I see Denzel as a great artist. He's a little genius. I've met a lot of brilliant people in my life, and Denzel compares with any of them.
Mm.
And I feel, you would do the same in the same situation. He's a talent that can't be dismissed.
Yeah.
And I think of the Scorsese film about Bob Dylan and how Bob Dylan says in it that once he got through the door, they couldn't stop him. And I think Denzel's got a lot to say in this current political climate. And if I can be that person who helps facilitate to get him and other rappers like him through the door, then we'll see a new kind of refreshing rap music, which has got a lot of political content.
Right.
And he certainly has a lot to say. In fact, Ethiopia, who is is a record company executive, is actually helping try to get him a deal as we speak.
Now, where is
she
Ethiopia?
Says that she thinks he's a prophet, and it's crazy, because he's only writing and creating music about what's out there now.
Right.
And if America's too horrified to recognize that there is a kind of a city of God now in most of the cities of America, where there are 14-year-old and 16-year-old hitmen, and they are experiencing these things, then, Denzel needs to talk about it. And, Swizz Beatz says, your story's even more real than 50 Cent's. And really, things have moved on and gotten a lot tougher than they were probably in 50 Cent's day. And these 14-year-olds, Denzel and later in the movie Bam Bam from Brooklyn, do represent this this new frightening vision that's coming out of these neighborhoods, and their music reflects that. And I'm really worried that there could be commercial censorship and their voice may not be heard. I'd certainly pray that it is.
Now, you're alluding to something that's in the film, but for those, most people have not seen your film. In the film, we see record producer, rap music producer after rap music producer tell Denzel how much they sense and recognize that he's extraordinary, that he's quite talented. But they say that his lyrics, which are about his experience in Sub Brown, which involves death, which involves drug dealing, which involves gunplay, are not, quote-unquote, age-appropriate. They feel that it's going to alarm certain sectors of the society who don't want to contemplate the idea that kids of his age are dealing with this kind of reality. And yes, the kid, obviously, is writing about what he... and singing, rapping about what he sees, what he's felt, what he knows. So, I mean, it's the most...
It's not fantasy, it's real.
You know, it's just the most appalling thing to hear, watch these guys say, we love you, Denzel, but let's talk a little more positively about your...
Well, they say that he's even the future of rap music, but the proviso is that they want him to be prepared to be coached to do a kind of music that they think that a 14-year-old should be rapping about. And... you know, the pressure on Denzel is enormous because his family is in so much poverty and so much danger.
Right.
And yet he's too much of an artist. He is like a little Bob Dylan to do false lyrics. He just can't do them. He's just too much of an artist to make himself do them. So,
right.
You know, I'm still persevering to try and hopefully the film will help him get a voice, you know.
Now, Ethiopia is based in New York. Is that where they are?
That's correct, okay. Yes. And she's actually now a consultant for Interscope, and she's presently talking to Interscope, trying to get them, you know, they're the company that has Eminem and 50 Cent,
right.
To be prepared to audition Denzel. So we're keeping our fingers crossed on that one.
Yeah. Now, in this British journalist who spoke to you in Berlin said that the British network ABC, he can't be referring to American Broadcasting, I don't know what he's saying, but basically there's a company called ABC that didn't want to show your film because and you basically deduced it was because of subject matter. Can you
I don't know, I haven't heard that myself. Read that article myself.
Oh, sorry.
It's new to me.
Right. Well, it has a guy named Stuart Menzies, who's the head of documentary.
Oh, Stuart Menzies. Okay.
Yeah.
No, this is ABC Australia. No, ABC Australia is against the film because they feel that rap music is outside their demographic, which is terrifying, you know.
Right.
So while Soundtrack to War was Soundtrack to War was one of the highest rating documentaries I've ever had. That's my last one.
Yeah.
The conservative people within the ABC and a lot of conservative people wrote in, you know, who watch the ABC, they like opera, the opera lovers, and said, you know, never let another film like that on TV. And unfortunately, it seems like the ABC have listened to that.
Okay.
And that makes it very hard, you know, because the ABC was the best outlet for our last film. It actually got Critics' Choice as Best Documentary of the Year.
Right.
And yet they won't even look at Rampage because they feel that, you know, unfortunately rap music is outside of their demographic, you know, that not enough people are, you know, would want to see a rap. In fact, I've had a lot of criticism from people like Stuart Menzies that an Australian shouldn't be making a film like this, that it's American subject matter and it should be left to Americans. Whereas similar people wouldn't worry about me making a film about East Timor or about Palestine. It seems that Americans should be the only ones allowed to comment on themselves. I haven't seen that review, but I know what you're talking about.
Now, you mentioned, I saw a clipping elsewhere that said that Soundtrack to War and Rampage are part of a trilogy that you're intending. There's a third one?
I'm doing No Exit next, where I'll go back to Baghdad and be looking at a lot of the soldiers and individuals who are in Soundtrack to War, and still covering the Lovett family and Denzel's progress, plus interweaving that with making a documentary about the feature film that Stone Village are hoping to make based on both films, which is Palace of the End. And it's interesting that part of my contract with Stone Village enables me to make a film about the film they're making about the war based on my stuff, you know, on my material. And it's always been a process that interests me as a war journalist. I've never chosen to make dramas, you know, fictional films, to see the way war is fictionalized. While to many Americans, a film like Black Hawk Down seemed very realistic. To someone like me who was in Somalia, it was very off the mark and inaccurate. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do to my material. And that can be, I think, the documentary could potentially, like, I'd rather be directing the documentary, which shows a film being made about my film, about this next phase in the war in Iraq, and about whether Denzel can get out of the... You know, so all of my ensemble, all the people from, that have been developed in the first two films are going to continue into the third film.
Okay.
And my original aim was always to breach the war, you know, to be going backwards and forwards between America and Baghdad, because this really is a tale of two cities, a war between two cities in a sense, two countries.
Right.
And so, yeah, this trilogy, I think, will kind of contain a kind of a cultural history of this conflict in an odd sort of a way, you know.
Well, I would, of course, hope that I know that you've been meeting around town with people here in Los Angeles about it being distributed, and I would hope that perhaps that they would there would be some kind of tie-in with Denzel's CD when and if he gets an arrangement for that to come out at the same time.
Yeah, well, I've actually produced a CD parallel with the film, so we don't have to wait for a record company. We can bring out a CD of Denzel and Elliot's music with the film.
Right, okay.
And then if he gets a deal, he'll make another album, which will be new music. But we have got very highly... professionally recorded great CD. You've heard some of the songs in the film. In many ways, the film is a musical because there's an enormous amount of music in it, you know, very high-quality rap music. Personally, I love Terrible Child, which is the song we have over the titles at the end. I think that could be a hit.
Yeah.
And that's been produced, you know, I've executive produced it, but the Diaz brothers of Miami, who produced Pitbull, have produced that, and I think it could be a top 40 single.
Mm-hmm. Right. It says here also that you and your producer, Gabrielle Dalton,
that's correct,
are going to write or are writing a feature screenplay that is going to incorporate what happened and what you recorded in Soundtrack as well as Rampage. Is that true also?
No. It's the same thing. It's a Palace of the End film.
Oh, I see.
I don't feel that I'm competent to write a major Hollywood feature film script, but it's part of my apprenticeship. I'm hoping that if I can see how the scripts are developed from my source material, and I've done the treatment for it, I've written the basic story, and then actually have the good fortune to make a documentary about it and watch some top American director direct it, I'd like to move into making some drama films myself based on my own experience.
Right.
And so I think this is a kind of an apprenticeship for me.
Okay.
But Pictures in Paradise, who recently made The Proposition, have asked me to direct a film based on a script that I am writing, which is called The Minefield Bar, and that's about a bar in Cambodia in 1993, which I actually ran for a while, and it was during the Khmer Rouge period. And it's during the transition to democracy, and at that time, Cambodia was going through a similar period to what Iraq is going, where it's the end of the, you know, Pol Pot regime, and everyone was hoping for a democracy. And in that case, fortunately, the democracy succeeded. So that should be a very timely film. It'd be quite a small budget film, and so I'm sort of moving to a phase of my life where I'm still going to war zones and making documentaries, but I'm starting to want to, use all this experience of all this conflict and everything else to actually start very late in life to make some dramas based on my material.
I look forward to them, George. I think that your stuff really has an alive quality that I'm sure would translate into the feature format. Let me just ask you something. I'm kind of curious. You've been to Iraq more than anyone I have ever personally spoken to.
Yes.
Can you give me an idea, just from what your gut tells you, from what your experience is, what is going to happen, do you think, regarding our presence over there, regarding what the Bushies are trying to do? What's going to be happening, say, I mean, right now they're talking about the beginning of a nascent civil war. They're not talking about just resistance to us. They're talking about a real civil war that we're going to be in the part of. Is that credible? Do you believe that?
Well, I think that, you know, the resistance has waged a publicity war, right, you know, and what we're looking at is not a war like Vietnam, where you had Ho Chi Minh, who had a very legal, big army with a lot of, you know, real public support. Fighting what was quite a corrupt government, you know, in Saigon. Here you've got mainly Sunni bad losers, you know, people who were part of the Sunni ruling class of Saddam Hussein, and they're creating havoc, and And the idea is that the more they can bomb, you know, those reports come through and it looks like civil war. And I think the Shias have shown enormous restraint. I've been to the mosque in Samarra, and apart from the loss of life, it's the loss of one of the great wonders of the world culturally. It's one of the very early great mosques. And
It was totally destroyed?
Totally destroyed.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a terrible precedent. You know, I'd hate to see something happen to, you know, the Dome of the Rock in Israel, but in Jerusalem. But the Shias have shown enormous restraint, and they've pulled back from the brink, as George Bush has said. I think the problem is most people confuse their problem with George Bush as a president who's done a lot, made a lot of mistakes, and they almost want to see Iraq fail so that George Bush won't be proven to be right. But as someone who cares about the people and cares about what the soldiers, American soldiers, have bravely died for, I really do want to see democracy succeed in Iraq. And I've seen a lot of things which have made that almost seem impossible. I mean, the Abu Ghraib incident was so shocking, it virtually, you know, the torture in Abu Ghraib virtually lost so much for America. That was just unbelievable that could happen, because up to that point, the Iraqis were pretty much saying, well, the Americans are better than Saddam. But when that happened, that was a turning point. It made America look like the regime all over again, you know.
Right.
And but, you know, for the sake of all these people in Iraq, because I was been working in Iraq prior to the war, I really, really do hope that America retains its resolve and sees this thing through. It's like a car crash and driving away from the wreck. You know, if you cause the crash, then you've got to try and, you know, get medical attention for the people there. I don't think America should have gone into Iraq in the first place, but, it would be unthinkable to let the country fall into a dreadful civil war. You know, I've seen similar civil wars, and I really don't wish it on the people of Iraq. So, but however, I would say that it's already well on the way to being a civil war. I remember the American Army wasn't prepared to call the resistance movement a resistance until long after it had established itself as a resistance movement, and everyone in the street was calling it the resistance movement. So it's just this fear of, just as economists are frightened to call something a recession or a depression, once you give it that label,
how many
then
permanent,
you're into a new era, you know?
How many permanent bases are being built or have been built by U.S. forces over there? I understand that quite a few.
Oh, yes, you know, and I mean, it's bizarre seeing on television the other day, the one in Fallujah, where, you know, they've got a huge American force in Fallujah, and they're saying how wonderful the size of that base is, but the actual city was, everyone was forced out of the city, and when I was going through Fallujah, it was like an atomic bomb had been dropped on it, it was wiped out. So, you know, it's a very difficult thing. In some ways, I'm the right person to ask, in that I'm intimate with it. Some ways I'm the wrong person to ask, because I really do care about the Iraqi people. And if you look at Soundtrack to War, you'll see how, like, what I've tried to do as a filmmaker is show that there are Iraqis like the Baghdad BGs who share a common culture to us, and that it was a educated, you know, secular country without fanaticism. And, you know, it's actually Iraq. You know, when America first came in, all the Iraqis said, they seemed to think that we're like Afghanis, but they weren't. You know, Iraq was a modern city like Geneva or something. It was like a European city, beautiful buildings, wonderful architecture, great universities. Everyone in the Middle East sent their kids to Iraq to get their engineering and medical degrees. And now that's all just gone into total chaos. And it is starting to turn to a place like Afghanistan, where there are fundamentalists coming to the fore. And so, you know, it's just been horrible to see the transformation. I was no fan of Saddam Hussein. I was very aware of his secret police and his prisons. But, you know, I would never have recommended a war. I predicted this, before the war, and tried to advise people against it. But now that it's happened, I think there's a huge moral obligation to try and see the democracy thing through, you know, to give it every chance that can be given. And also to remember that no matter how many people say it's like Vietnam, it's nothing like Vietnam. The dynamics of the thing are very, very different.
All right, well, George, thank you very much for for taking the time. Again, I urge everyone, when Rampage does make it into theaters, which I presume or hope will be sometime later this year, that everybody have it, see it. And I hope that it also has a big following when it hits DVD. And I hope that Denzel Lovett has a great career. And I just hope everything works
And
film,
the other thing, Jeff, is that Soundtrack to War was released last week into stores. So you can go to Tower and Virgin and everywhere. And the first in this series is now available.
Right.
Throughout America.
Yeah, I just happened to notice that. I was at Laser Blazer the other night. There it was, right up on the
screen. Yeah, and you can get it on Amazon.com. So if people want to, you know, get a taste of something, Giddos now, even before Rampage comes out, I really encourage them to go and see Soundtrack to War.
Okay. George, thank you again, man. Very nice meeting you, and I hope to see you again when you come back to Los Angeles.
Yeah, I'd love to spend some more time chilling with you, Jeff. It was a wonderful meeting. It was great to meet someone with the kind of detail and wealth of knowledge you've got. It's fantastic.
Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
Bye. Take care.